Welcome to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and staff achieve peak economic and practice efficiency so there is time and energy to focus on patient care and a happy life. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-hosts, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter.
Today's episode is brought to you by ModMed. Do your EHR and PM adapt to your style of practice? The ModMed EHR and PM do, with benefits like remembering preferences and automatically suggesting documentation and billing codes. Urologists voted ModMed the number one urology-specific EHR and PM solution available, built by urologists with input from yours truly. Stop wasting 60 minutes and 200 for each of your open or no-show slot. Go to modmed.com/PRSnetwork. Set up an appointment with the team at ModMed Urology and shift your urology practice into high gear. Imagine a solution on a tablet or the web that works seamlessly with revenue cycle management, analytics, telehealth, payment processing, patient engagement tools, and much more. ModMed is transforming healthcare by placing doctors and patients at the center of care.
Welcome to episode 144 of the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-host Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter. And on this episode, we want to talk about some general observation from last week's AUA meeting in Chicago and a quick update on the implications of the PHE ending. First, I want to let you know that the Urology Advanced Coding and Reimbursement Seminar registration is open. And you can find a link and a special discount code for listeners of this podcast on the episode page, prsnetwork.com/144. All right. Well, what we wanted to do in giving some general observations of the AUA, we wanted to go around and kind of give our thoughts of the AUA and anything that we thought might be of interest to you listening on the podcast. So, Mark, do you want to share some observations that you had?
Yeah, so the AUA was interesting, Scott. First, it was great to bump into people we haven't seen in a while, catch up, get a general flavor for how everybody's doing. And, you know, certainly with with everything that's going on, there's a big mix of things going on in the marketplace. And, you know, one is there are a lot of urologists that are getting close to retirement, thinking about retirement or having retired, that we've worked with forever. And, you know, the replacement of those folks in the workforce is not keeping up. We've all heard all the statistics, 10 out, one in, as far as urologists. We're looking at that shortage situation that has been projected for a long time. And then, of course, it was interesting on the upside, and hearing from APPs and what they're doing to contribute to urology care and how they're growing in what they do and what they're trusted with and their expertise and their training. So from a personnel side, that was interesting. And then listening to different groups talk about where they are with their practices, with all the various activities with private equity, hospitals, employing or not employing folks. What some of these guys who are, deciding to move more towards locum tenens work. I mean, there is just a plethora of different approaches to healthcare right now. And I would have to say kind of one of my overall takeaways in all of this was, even though it's absolutely crazy right now and there is nothing about the current system that has the stability of urology that we've dealt with for so many years, with physicians setting up practice and staying where they are and building a big practice and you know, growing that practice and adding services to it. You know, there's still some of that, but with everything else that's going on, you know, the one big takeaway I would say is, boy, it's, you know, it's good to be a urologist. You know, you have so many choices in how you would like to practice medicine right now. It's not the same as it was, but there are still great opportunities and there is great need out there for urology. And then the second thing was wandering around the exhibit hall, which we did a lot of. There's some interesting new technology coming down the pipeline. You know, a lot of different focuses on what everybody's doing and treatment options that are either on the way or just being introduced into the market, and the reimbursement that's out there and how slow the system adapts to change really, you know, brought home that RCM side of the equation, your revenue cycle management, your documentation support, because you're going to be using unlisted codes and a bunch of things for these new technologies, that you're really going to have to figure out the reimbursement pathway after you determine whether or not this new technology is really that beneficial to the patients. And, you know, we saw a lot that looked like it was very promising, and obviously the proof is in the pudding. One of the things a common resonating thing we spoke with exhibitors and physicians alike about relative to all this new technology is you can't get past the need for clinical proof of a new technology. And so looking for papers and support that's out there in peer-reviewed documentation, extremely important as you jump into the reimbursement game. And then the need overall to really sit down before you bring a new technology into your practice and build out a business plan or a rough business plan, which includes the reimbursement projections and pathways, is essential with today's margins. And on the flip side, it's essential to grow and add those new technologies, not get left behind. So a lot of interesting things out there, a lot of twists and turns. And boy, my mind's still spinning a little bit for where we go next. But it's in the end, it's exciting. I think is the other word. Yeah, there's some stress, but it's exciting.
Ray, what were your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. First, it's great to see old friends and reminisce about the old days and changes that have occurred over the years of practice, and talk with some of our former docs that we've worked with and their appreciation for having spent the time and trying to learn a little about the documentation and coding, and their appreciation for the fact that it is important to do. And I also talked with a number of the medical industrial complex, as I like to call them, and the pharmas about what we're doing with the residents and to find their interest in playing it forward and helping residents learn while they're young, because regardless of what form of employment they choose, learning the proper documentation and the basic rules and concepts of coding is very important. And I think there's more and more people realizing that. So that was good. And the new technologies, you know, just kind of blow your mind. All the choices you have to make as a practicing urologist this day and time. I don't know what I would have done if I was still in practice in my sort of country practice in Grand Junction, Colorado, with my four partners. How would we, as busy as we were, how would we navigate this field? So from that standpoint, I feel for the practicing urologist.
Yep, and I think looking at all the stuff that they have to make decisions on, adapt to, and the burden of the rules and regs and all that stuff, that's a lot to on the urologist's plate. Well, my observations were I really had three things that I wanted to share. First, as we were walking around the hall, we noticed that there were more medical device innovations coming out as opposed to the pharmaceutical side of things. And that hasn't been that way in a while. It hasn't seemed that way in a while. But we kind of noticed that as a general observation, that there's a lot of new technology coming out from the device side of things that we saw. And, you know, there are some new drugs coming out, and we saw some of the things that were in the clinical trial phase and those things. But really, it was impressive to see all the new device technology. The second thing I thought was really interesting, and the exhibitors did also comment on this in several different discussions we had, that, you know, the first discussion is about the clinical side, but very close on the heels is the question of, and how is this paid? And they said that the urologists were very astute at that, and that urology was different than the other specialties when it came to that question as far as how it's paid. So I thought that was interesting, that we are seeing the urology community, and hopefully this continues, that needs to be a very important part of the decision in bringing a new technology in. At least you have to have that side covered. You know, maybe so excited with the clinical side and you want to work with it, and there are ways to do that, even if you don't have a clear reimbursement, if you want to be one of the leaders of the pack. But that getting that reimbursement side, if you're truly making a decision on what's best for your practice financially as well as your patients, you have to have both pieces married together. And then the final thing, I heard the word re-ruck a lot of times. And it's interesting, because with the new technologies and the companies and the manufacturers looking at the reimbursement path, if there's going to be a new code assigned to a group, that means that all the codes in that particular family have to be revalued. So there's careful consideration on how you approach that because of the various values assigned to the current codes. And it's a delicate process, which there's a lot of strategy going into that. And I thought that was interesting to hear from not only the urologist side and the provider side, but also the manufacturer side, because the manufacturers want to make it as easy as possible for their technology to get adopted and the reimbursement to be accepted. And, you know, that even though a Category 1 code may be the best final reimbursement placement, it may not always be the best for the overall code family or for urology in general. So that has to be balanced out, that delicate walk. All right. Any comments on that? Anything else? All right. Let's dive in the second half of this. The PHE is ending on May 11th. So we wanted to talk about, just give a quick update on the implications of the PHE ending. Mark, do you want to share what's at stake, what's happening, and what's the buzz, and why are we talking about it?
Well, as you know, as we all experienced, I would say, COVID-19 turned everything upside down. And one of the ways that CMS and Medicare were able to drive the changes that they did to allow healthcare to be driven or provided during a lockdown was to declare a public health emergency. That gave some executive power to the Secretary of Health and Human Services to change the rules or to supersede some of the rules that exist. That public health emergency has been renewed each 90 days because they can only declare a public health emergency for 90 days. And it's been renewed every 90 days since April and or March in 2020. And actually, technically, the original declaration was in January, and we saw HHS and the Secretary of Human Services really leverage that power to make changes in March of 2020 with some follow-up changes in April and moving forward. But they are finally going to let it expire. They're not going to renew the public health emergency on May 11th. So it expires. If there were nothing else done, all of the telehealth and all the changes that were in Medicare would just be gone. Well, there was a lot of discussion around the country about how much people enjoyed telehealth and how so many of these changes beyond just telehealth were now, after 3 years, kind of entwined in the way the system works. So before they let the public health emergency expire, there were several moves by Congress to allow Medicare to address some of these changes and phase them out, I guess would be a better way to look at it, or maybe strategically give themselves a little bit more time to make permanent changes. But one of the things that is expiring that we should have all had time to deal with already is all of the HIPAA exemptions that were in place during the public health emergency. So HIPAA rolls back into play. So you really do need to make any changes that are required for the technology that you're using. Both your hardware and your software really have to be HIPAA compliant moving forward. I think most people are focusing that on telehealth, and I would too, telehealth and phones, to make sure that you're using HIPAA compliant software and hardware, and you're in a location that's HIPAA compliant, because all of those exemptions are now gone as you look moving forward. But that is also true of, risk assessments and everything else that we're doing with all of these crazy cyber attacks. Taking some time and taking a look at where your HIPAA risk is from a general standpoint while you're thinking about HIPAA is also a good idea. So that's one of the things that's dropping right away. We did see a little bit of a change already back in April, as some of the requirements federally to keep people on Medicaid were retired in April. So you may see some of your patients that were on Medicaid that are now dropped from Medicaid. So you'll want to spend a little bit of time double checking every patient to make sure that all of their benefits and their coverage is still in play, or if it's not, if they've replaced that. So I think you got a little extra due diligence on the front office, which most people don't need, as the front office is a high turnover area and a tough one to manage with all of that they have in place. So you're going to want to spend some time making sure you're double checking eligibility and everything, which you should be doing anyway, but maybe throw a little extra microscopic eye on that. With regard to telehealth, though, the patients really enjoyed telehealth. I think most people enjoyed telehealth overall. And there, and I know that a lot of urologists have gone away from telehealth because it's been difficult, and it is sometimes difficult to deal with some of your patient population. But I do see it working in a lot of places, and I do think it has a place in urology. So we'll dive into that a little bit in more detail on our Monday webinar that will be recorded. So for a little more information there on, you know, how to leverage telehealth and urology practice under the new rules, please feel free to tune in there. But did want to give you quickly a summary relative to the PHE, because the information out there is very confusing at this point in time. So, and you've got two or three different things at play. Number one, obviously the PHE is expiring. So that is an event that we have to navigate around. But in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2022, Congress acted and wrote into law an extension of the PHE rules relative to telehealth for Medicare for 151 days after the end of the public health emergency. As Medicare was writing their final rule for 2023, so for this year, they knew they had this 151-day extension, and they knew that the public health emergency was going to go into January with a fairly high likelihood, and they probably knew with more certainty, because they had the internal knowledge, that we would see the public health emergency extended in January, pushing everything into May. And that, so 151 days would have put that public health emergency extension into November. And so Medicare wisely in the final rule decided that they would, in their final rule, extend the telehealth emergency rules through the end of 2023. So that was in the final rule. So we knew going into 2023 that the coverage for telephone-only services and telehealth would continue to be covered as it was in the public health emergency, allowing the patient to be at home and using audio-visual qualified for telehealth would allow E&M services to be used and payment parity. So the fee schedules were all set. Well, and then the third piece of the puzzle that came in is in December when they passed the Consolidated Appropriation Act of 2023. In addition to fixing the conversion factor, so you know, blocking the 4.5% decrease, cutting that in half, and they also set a conversion factor drop for 2024 with a few parameters around it to keep that conversion factor from falling off a cliff in 2024. But they also included in that legislation an extension of the public health emergency rules through the end of 2024. So as I was, you know, going through and making sure that all my I's were dotted and T's were crossed, when you look through the CMS information that's out there and you look through a lot of the information that's floating around relative to telehealth and what's going to happen after the public health emergency ends, it takes a couple of levels to find that, in fact, the rules are going to extend to 2024. Now, we're guaranteed payment levels through 2023. It looks to me from the law that was passed that the payment parity would continue through the end of 2024. But we all know that the devil in the detail is, you know, the way a law is constructed, there is the actual directive and then it floats through the policy wonks for the application. So we are going to need to keep an eye on what is published in June, July of this year in the proposed rule, and again in the final rule, to determine how Medicare is going to comply with the Consolidated Appropriation Acts of 2024. But we know what they're going to do through 2023. We know what the law says through 2024. And we also know the general reaction to telehealth has been overwhelmingly positive. So our expectations are that telehealth is here to stay. And we are waiting for Congress, which has already had several bills passed through the House, waiting on the Senate to do their part. And that is also somewhat dependent on budget cycling. So we're expecting a longer term solution relative to telehealth. My recommendation at this time is to plan for it to stay. The technology exists, the people are out there, and figure out how to leverage that into your practice.
All right. Thanks for that update, Mark. And Mark did mention that we are having a special edition webinar, which is going to be on May 8th, 2023 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And the topic is going to be telehealth post-PHE. And we will put a link to that webinar in the episode page. So if you go to prsnetwork.com/144, you'll have a link to that. And if you're listening to this after May 8th, that link will also lead you to the recording. So if you missed, if you're going to miss the actual webinar itself, or if you've already missed it, you can check it out on that page as well, and then register for the ongoing Maximizing Income and Efficiencies for Practice, for Urology Practices webinar series. That's our monthly series. And we want to thank ModMed for sponsoring that. All right. That's all we got for today. Let's go around the horn. Mark, final thoughts.
I think I've given you a lot of thoughts today. yes. Yeah. So, you know, generally, urology, the practice of urology, the healthcare, I mean, everything is in a state of evolutionary flux at this point in time. So, it is important to look towards the future, understand your local marketplace and how things are working, and remain adaptable.
Ray, final thoughts.
Well, I'd like to give thoughts on from two standpoints on telehealth. First, as a patient, I tell you, I really appreciate the telehealth, and I see a lot of different styles from different practices. And you should get organized, and if you do, it can be very efficient. And as we audit charts and see how different ones do it as well, we can see that for some, it's a very cost-saving and very lucrative practice. And from a practicing urologist, Mark, from what I heard, is I can keep doing telephone only if I have to, and I can continue to get paid for an office visit at that price, using video and telephone, and we know that's going to happen through 2023, and we'll have to wait on the final rule to see exactly what the rules are for 2024, but we think it's continuing through there. So you got plenty of time to plan it up, and you have to be, the thing that's changed, you now have to be sure you're using HIPAA-compliant equipment. Is that the bottom line?
That is a bottom line, yes.
All right.
Yes. All right. Well, if there's no more thoughts, we'll end this here. I do want to also thank ModMed again and encourage you to check out their practice management and EHR solutions. You can go to modmed.com/PRS network for a special offer for our podcast listeners. All right, that's all we got for today. Take us out, Ray.
Happy coding.
Thank you for listening to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and their staff maximize income and efficiencies so there's time and energy for patient care and a happy life. Special thanks to Carl Painter for the music today. You can find his music on Spotify under his record label, The Juicery.